You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 419. I'm your host, András Pintér, and joining me for the show are my co-hosts, Annika Harrison and Pontus Böckmann. Sziasztok!
Hallo!
Heysan, heysan! And we are full crew again, back together again. Yes.
Yeah, wow.
So we were traveling both, not just András. András is traveling all the time. I don't know how he does it, but I was traveling as well last week, and I was up. But I can tell you, I am sitting down. Which is maybe a strange announcement, but I usually stand up at my desk because I have a desk that you can have up or down like this. But I was skiing last week and my body is it's totally... I mean, nothing happened. I didn't break any bones or anything. It's just...
Your
just
legs
exhausted.
Are like, nope.
Yeah. So
you had to use muscles that you usually don't use?
I didn't even know I had them. So, yes.
How long have you been doing the skiing thing?
We usually do that every year, but for a week every year, and my muscles forget, and I forget in between the takes.
Okay.
And also, I should say, we had a fantastic time. This was in north of Sweden, 8-hour drive, which is its own thing, but... We were very fortunate with the weather. Fantastic. We were at the place called Vemdalen. So please spell that, if you will. But it is not the biggest in Sweden. It's a smaller sort of system but we were very lucky with. And also, always before, we have had to go when the kids have a week off from school. Which means everybody else goes that week. But finally... I'm old enough that my kids are grown up. They don't go to school anymore. So we could take another week, which meant there was less people in the slopes. And lovely. Yes, we had plenty of snow. We had sun. We had a little bit of more snow, but that was just fun. And we had rented a little condo or an apartment. It was on the ground floor, and it was... I kid you not, it was like 20 meters from the main lift.
Nice.
So we just, you know, when they ran the, what do you call it? The pist machines, the one that really prepares the slopes. It felt like they were running through our apartment.
Living room.
Our living room, yes. fortunately, they only did that a few hours after they had closed the slopes. They did that and then it was fine. We had a lovely time, so good.
Awesome.
And by that time, you were drunk anyway.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying.
It was so funny with off-season traveling because Scotty was always so happy doing that. Luna is too young to go to school, of course. But now that I started work again, he's stuck with traveling in season again.
Oh, yeah. Mm. So you have to travel when everybody else is. So that's too bad. Too bad.
I travel during the season all the time. So that's what I do for a living.
No difference at all.
But I have to mention, I had a very interesting experience traveling. The reason why I couldn't make it to the last recording of the interview with Brian. Sorry about that, Brian. I would have loved to be there. But I went to a place, or three places actually, that I haven't been to for 4.5 years. And that was only my second time to visit those places. So that's always a lot of stress as a tour guide to do that.
Yeah, because you're supposed to be the expert, right?
You have to be. So these times I spend every waking hour that I don't spend talking to people preparing for the moments when I talk. so sleeping is out of the question. It's like 3 to 4 hours a night. So yeah, it was stupid of me to offer to do the editing of the show. And as our listeners know, this resulted in a little bit of a delay. So on the way back home, on the plane, I managed to finish it. So thanks for bearing with us, people.
Yeah, it was just one day late. That's not too bad.
Yeah, but I can never be as punctual as Pontus. So
because you have a life.
You do too.
Well,
you just mentioned how much of a life you have.
Hello, you just went skiing, Pontus.
Exactly. Yeah.
What you said before proves that the statement there was wrong.
yeah, okay. But life is a vacation with me, so that's fine.
Yeah, so, but the places I went were Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan. So quite an interesting change. Actually, I was sad to see that Hong Kong has lost a lot of its...
Britishness?
Not the Britishness, the glamour that elevated atmosphere. I couldn't find it anymore. Mm. Macau has become even more beautiful, and there have been lots of construction works and even more casinos.
Weepy.
But Taiwan was really interesting as well. So I picked up learning a bit of Chinese as well, because I just have to. Without that, you cannot get through in Taiwan, even though they are supposed to be the country where a lot of people do speak English and they don't. But I'm going back again in April. So if there are people, because I know it's difficult to find people in mainland China who can listen to stuff like our podcast, if there is anyone listening to this from Taiwan, please let us know, because I would love to meet Chinese skeptics.
Preferably a language teacher. So
from the free land of China, not the People's Republic of China, but the Republic of China, that is Taiwan. Yeah. I'm not saying anything else, lest I get...
I get into a position
of not being allowed to mainland China at all, had the opportunity showed itself. No, yeah. So I'm going back to Taiwan, and I would really love to meet Taiwanese skeptics, if there are any that listen to this show.
I've been to Taipei, but that was like 15, 16 years ago. So it's a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, the building they call 101 was still the highest building in the world. And I'm proud to have been there on the ground floor only. for reasons we don't have to get into now. It was such a stupid thing to be. I've been into the highest building in the world, but I only went to the ground floor. Never mind.
That was actually the first building in the world that surpassed 500 meters.
Ah, okay. I wouldn't have known. I was on the ground floor. Anyway, to get to the... to the higher floors, maybe you need a flying unicorn.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
So we are happy to report that there are flying unicorns in the world, at least flying unicorn awards, because it's that time of the year again, folks, when the Portuguese skeptics are handing out these awards. So the Portuguese skeptics, known as Comcept, is one of the more active skeptical groups out there. And every year they nominate three different actors in four different categories. And then the public can vote on who deserves to be publicly shamed within the respective categories for spreading nonsense or being very pseudoscientific. And the four categories are the shooting star for television stars and stars from the artistic, athletic or entertainment business. And then there is the grafonola, which I believe is a phonograph. I'm trying to do Google Translate here, but it's the old type of gramophone or phonograph. And this award is for the media and their agents in the print business, radio, television. Then there's the Don Quixote Prize for the most far-fetched statement or theory, for the refusal to face reality and for defending the indefensible. That's from the website. And then the last category is The King Goes Naked, or rather, I think it's from the same story that what we call The Emperor Has No Clothes. And this is for everyone else who makes or contributes to the propagation of dubious claims without evidence or against evidence as well. So anyone, we will leave the link in the show notes. Anyone can go to their website, to the Comcept website, and vote on the different nominees. But the time is short. The last day to vote is the 31st of March. And then the winners will be announced the following day on April Fool's Day, April 1st. So I really think it's a great thing for skeptical organizations to hand out or appoint these sort of shameful prizes, but to point out and get some publicity about people and organizations that are spreading nonsense that are, in many cases, are harmful. It's not just for fun. It's serious business. So well done to Diana and the gang over there in Portugal.
Mm-hmm. Pontus talked about something that's not as fun, and something that's also not fun is stress, as you know.
Mm.
And yeah, that's why I actually have to take a step back from this podcast, and that's something I wanted to announce today.
Mm.
But luckily, only for 2 months. So it will only be like, this will be my last recording until the beginning of June. So, because my stress levels with school, with a little child, with being part of GVOP and everything else that's going on, I just need to take a step back, because I also want to, of course, I can't do the podcast half-assed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, it is a big commitment to do this. And of course, your health and your well-being must go first. But we will, of course, miss you.
Mm-hmm.
And
I will miss you guys and our listeners in the podcast.
Well, you can listen to the podcast.
Yes, that's the one thing I won't miss, because I can listen to it.
Because we will continue. But maybe we'll bring in a few guest hosts. We haven't really discussed it, but we'll do something to keep the show going. Mm-hmm. And some weeks, of course, it will just be me and Andras, and you'll have to live with that. I'm sorry, dear listeners.
Yeah, but it's absolutely a privilege to be part of this. And I do want to continue doing that. And that's why I just need to have like a bit of a handbrake session, so to say, for a bit. And then I'll be back with a lot more energy.
That's very understandable and sensible.
Thank you.
Good thing to do.
Yeah, looking forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, but do keep listening.
I will.
That's good.
I will. I'll keep my ears peeled for any twishing.
Yeah. And you have been one of our most relentless listeners, even from before you started doing it yourself with us.
Yes, so. I had the title fangirl number one.
Yes.
Yeah, you're still allowed to keep that. But only if you keep listening.
Yeah.
All right. Talking about doing the show, I think we do have one to produce for this week. And as usual, we will start with Twish, otherwise known as This Week in Skeptical History. The thing that I'd like to talk about this week is not only an important part of skeptical history. Mainly we don't even think about it as such, but of world history. Many, many years ago, more than 100 years ago, on the 23rd of March, 1919, an important event of world history happened, and that was the foundation of the predecessor of the National Fascist Party in Italy, which was, and this is the skeptical angle of this, from then on, a powerhouse of propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it comes to modern propaganda and the methods of propaganda, there was no more skillful person to do that and to drive all that than Benito Amilcare Andrea Mussolini. Without going into too much detail of how it started, in 1919, he was already a very active person in Italian politics. And I have to mention that he started out as a socialist, and he was very much pro-war during the First World War. So he was learning the ways of propaganda through the publication of Il Popolo d'Italia in 1914. And through that, he expressed his views on how important it is for Italy to join the war and to fight for what's right for the country, in his opinion. After the First World War, he decided that he should probably change direction, and he started going down the road of nationalism, and the Italian nationalist ideas started to spread. But not as fast as one would think, based on how we know things ended up for him, becoming the de facto dictator of Italy. He grabbed power through very thought out but very concerning moves of violence and moving the propaganda machine further. So after a while, they published several different news outlets and newspapers that were spread all across the country. He gained the most of his support in northern Italy, but in the end, with not more than about 30,000 people supporting his case, he marched on Rome, and he twisted the hands of the then king, Victor... Vittorio Emanuele Terzo. So it's easier to say it in Italian.
If you say so.
Who was the king back then? And basically, he misjudged this person. He was very charismatic. He was very much of a strong character. And that was the appeal to most of the people. If you're ticking the boxes now as to what constitutes a leader, a dictator, and how someone becomes a dictator. So you need newspapers to spread the word. You need radio, you need all the different media channels that are available. And they were available. He made them available. So he gave radio speeches and he founded, well, founded is not the right word. He developed something that had already been there, and that was the film studios close to Rome. And he developed it into something that is now called Cinecittà, which is a town on its own next to Rome. And Cinecittà was the greatest power that he had when it came to propaganda. And he was a bit of a master to the other dictator that used him as an example of how to grab power. And we are, of course, talking about Adolf Hitler. Mm. And Hitler really copied his propaganda machines and his propaganda tools and developed them even further. So he became the master after a while, but it all started with Benito Mussolini, at least when it comes to big game propaganda. That meant that they used catchphrases, they used the distortion of facts in order for people to give their support to the fascist ideas. And that is something that should be used as an example all over the world, because that's what we are seeing in the rise as of today. All over the world, all over Europe, we can see that extremist ideas are gaining more support. This is very scary when it comes to the fact that 2024 is the year when half of the world goes to election booths. So it's really important for everyone to understand that these populist propagandistic ideas that gain support because of hardships between the two world wars can mislead people and can lead to even more suffering and even more devastation to a large part of the world. And we should work very hard to tackle that and try to counter that before it's too late. In the case of Mussolini, it was too late. The most important person who misjudged him was the king. And the king offered him leadership, offered him the position of a prime minister on his march on Rome. Because he thought, I mean, Victor Emmanuel, he thought that Mussolini could bring the country back together after so much suffering that was caused by the First World War. And he couldn't have been more wrong. The moment he got close to power, he just wanted even more power. And even though we know the end of the story, because he didn't die a very nice death. I mean, he was taken down by the people. He fled to Germany and given a puppet state, basically, in the northern part of Italy. But it didn't last long. And when he tried to flee, when the Allied forces started gaining ground, he was caught and executed. And even his dead body wasn't given too much of a respectful treatment. And that was putting it mildly. Yeah, he was taken apart, basically, in Milan. So we should try to use those examples. And as skeptics, we try to counter misinformation and different tools of propaganda with the very limited sources and resources that we have. But the most important thing is for every person out there who has the right to vote and can do something about this, try to understand how these things work and try to counter that.
Now, it's strange to think back when I went to school. We, of course, read about Mussolini. We read about Hitler and we read about the propaganda, but it was always packaged in a way that I, as a growing person, was thinking that, yeah, okay, that's what they did back then, but now we know better, it won't happen again. That was the message that I was told as a kid. And I believed it. And I think also my teachers believed that. But now we see we never learn as a human race. The human race never learns. We have, of course, Putin. We have Trump. We have things in the UK even, and in the Netherlands, even in Sweden, which I thought was such a haven of innocence and good. You know, it happens everywhere. You can never escape it. So when teaching about this in schools, what I should have been taught was that this happened and it can happen again. This is not history. This is part of the human condition, and it will probably always happen. And it's terrible, and we need to fight it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And don't fall for someone just because they are charismatic leaders or they have good rhetorics. It doesn't necessarily come with good intentions, and it doesn't necessarily come with the right mind. Yeah, and Mussolini is one great example, Adolf Hitler being another one, mm-hmm. but there are many, many more of those examples.
Yeah.
And they use our own inner incapability of distinguishing between truth and falsehoods and facts and fiction. It's an arms race of communication. You see, it looks like our skeptics, we are losing again, and we should probably do more. And this is why I wanted to talk about this.
Very cheerful.
On this show, very cheerful subject. Yeah. So on the 23rd of March, 1919, this happened. They were called the Italian fascists, Fasci Italiani di Combattimento, and that became later the Fascist Party. So the fascists, they were a kind of a weapon. So even the name suggested that it was like a paramilitary organization, and indeed it was. Mm-hmm. So like apart from the rhetorics and apart from the propaganda, they were doing very violent actions all over the country. Yeah, it was like guerrilla actions. All right, so let's move on and let's try to find out what else is killing us. So I think it's time for the news.
Yeah, and if we're talking about things that are killing us, my bet is either the climate or machines that run wild and develop an awareness and just kill us all. Of course,
so basically we're back to square one because it's all done by people. So
yeah, and with the machines, I'm totally like referring to a movie plot, of course.
Oh yeah, the rise of the machines.
Yes. There's actually a group of environmental activists that warn against believing that AI, artificial intelligence, will help address the climate crisis, which is always like a bit of the pro argument that like AI will help us with that. And this group actually argue that AI could actually lead to increased energy consumption and facilitate the spread of climate misinformation. So on the one hand, to really suck a lot of energy out of the system that's already strained. On the other hand, perpetuate misinformation and fake news and false information about climate science. We say like, yeah, I can, for example, track deforestation or overfishing, pollution leaks, predict extreme weather events. So there are things that are definitely possible and wonderful. But the problem is that AI could also increase the energy use and then also lead to the planet even heating up even more. So AI can have a benefit in addressing climate change with climate modeling, monitoring wildfires and everything I said before. But it's just important that we're using AI wisely and transparently so that there are people or states or whoever that monitor AI that also look around and see how it's using energy and how much to make it maybe even more energy efficient and to monitor the way it's maybe perpetuating climate falsehoods. That was really interesting because, yeah, and that's a direct quote from the text. We seem to be hearing all the time that AI can save the planet, but we shouldn't be believing this just like that.
Mm. No, it's always the same. A powerful tool can be used.
Yes.
In many ways, it can mm-hmm. be used for good or for bad, and sometimes you have to control it.
Yeah.
But also, it's...
Yeah, and a knife can be used for surgery. It can also be used for stabbing someone.
Correct. And you also need to remember that it's too easy to say AI will kill us.
No.
And it's easy to say AI is the solution for everything. Mm-hmm. It's always more complicated.
Yes.
So, yeah, nuance. Remember that. Yes. Things that seems too good to be true very often are. And that also applies to healthcare and medical things. So if you are a worm, a mouse, or perhaps a little pile of yeast, I have good news for you. Because there's an immunosuppressant drug that has, in some studies at least, been shown to have some anti-aging properties. It's called sirolimus. It's also known as rapamycin. And it is approved for human use to prevent organ transplant rejection and for also some other rare conditions, which I have rehearsed all afternoon to pronounce, but I can still not do it, so I won't even try. So it doesn't matter, because there are certain conditions where this substance can actually help. But now, since there is these reports of anti-aging properties from this compound, of course there are people out there now promoting it as a longevity drug. It's been around since the early 70s. It's a generic drug, meaning it is out of patents and things, so it's relatively cheap and easy to get your hands on. The Washington Post ran an article about one guy called David Sandler to illustrate what is happening. Sandler is 77 years old. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has any special conditions or that he's sick or anything. But he has now decided to take rapamycin regularly in the hope that it will make him live longer. He claims that he managed to order a full year's supply from India for only $200, and he's now taking this regularly. He says he knows the effect isn't proven in humans, and if he was a younger person, he would probably not do it. But he said, quote, "At this age, I'm making myself part of the experiment," end quote. But of course, that's not how science works. That's not a good experiment. How can you draw any conclusion from his so-called experiment? Mm-hmm. There is no control group. We don't know how long he would have lived without this drug. Let's say we look back at this after he's died. He may live to be 90, and that's fine, good for him. But who says he wouldn't be 100 if he had not taken the drug? You don't know. You can't draw any kind of conclusions from that. And it's not like it's without any side effects. According to research, rapamycin can lead to reproductive harm, insulin resistance, and since it is an immunosuppressant, it can make you more susceptible to infection. Because if you take away the power of your immune system, then of course you are more vulnerable for infections. So don't do this, people. As I said, if you are a worm, a mouse, or a little pile of yeast, maybe we have some data to say what will happen to you if you take this. But don't experiment on yourself, please.
When it comes to do's and don'ts, please don't do stupid things just because you misunderstand something. One of those examples is electromobility. It's probably no surprise to anyone listening to the show, but definitely isn't to the two of you, that I'm a great supporter of the electrification of transportation. Mm-hmm. And that kind of changeover is happening, and it is a good thing that it's happening. Of course, it doesn't come without its issues. And the issues are many. There are manufacturing issues with electric cars, and that comes specifically from the manufacturing of batteries. And there is the issue of battery life. There is the issue of how and what kind of a grid network you need in order to be able to support all the electric vehicles that are out there. So those are all issues. Those are all things that need a solution, that need to be dealt with. However, that doesn't mean that this is not a good way to go in the long run. And when people, based on their half informations and misunderstandings about a topic, decide to take action and decide that it's up to them to decide what's good or bad and how big companies should go on about their business, then things happen, the likes of which happened with the Tesla Gigafactory in Germany. Mm-hmm. So next to the German capital of Berlin, there is a place called Grünheide. And on the 5th of March, arson attacks happened on the electrical grid that supports the gigafactory as well, that produces 500,000 electric vehicles a year. Hence the name Gigafactory. And the issue is not only that they wanted to stop production of the cars, and they ended up doing that because the production had to be halted. And it has since resumed. But in the meantime, by doing that, destroying part of the electrical grid, a lot of people, a lot of households were out of electricity for days as well. So
stupid.
Yes, it's just inconsiderate. Like, why would you do something to harm the people that you admittedly are set to protect from these gigafactories that are polluting the environment and cutting down trees and everything? So the whole thing started with Tesla announcing that they would like to expand the factory. They would like to add new sections, and that would result in a larger area being affected, like trees cut down in the forest near the factory. So that is an understandable worry that people have with regards to that. However, this is something that cannot be really stopped. And when it comes to the changeover to electromobility, this is the way to go. And there are so many misconceptions. I think we should probably get someone on the show at some point about this, because there are so many misconceptions when it comes to that. The batteries, how batteries are being produced, how harmful they are to the environment, how much of actual recycling can occur. Because people do think that there is no recycling whatsoever. It's impossible to recycle them, and it's very harmful to the environment, and then you have to throw it away after a couple of years. So people do think that after 6 or 7 years, you have to throw away the whole battery pack, which is not true. And there are so many nuances to this as well. Like, it depends on how the battery management system of the car works. Some cars do a very shitty job at that. Some cars are amazing at that. Tesla's being among the ones that are amazing in that regard. So they can retain their charging capacity over many, many years, or not lose a large chunk of that. That means that they are usable for much more than a decade even, without having to replace them or even restore them or mend them. So it's like, maintaining that is not what people usually think. And the other problem is that the manufacturing comes with a lot more emissions initially than that of combustion engine cars. However, they make up for it after, it depends on what car and what the electric mix is like, but they quickly make up for it. And then after a while, it becomes really, really worthwhile to run on an electric car. But people don't do the math. People don't think about all those tiny details. They just go by what they hear, what they read on Facebook. And I have to break it to everyone. Facebook is not a reliable source of information. And there are so many things that are driven by people's misconceptions. And don't trust that as a source. Try to think about complicated things as they are. So I think the good old saying applies here as well, that I think you'll find it's a bit more complicated than that. But even if you're right and it's harmful, achieving your goal of stopping a factory producing cars, the right thing to do that is not arson attacks.
If you're given a choice, arson is very seldom the right answer to any
exactly.
problem.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So do not do that, people.
No. Something you also shouldn't do is take down a billboard that only wants to help people, but that's the wrong continent. People who are following the news about Scientology in the US will know what I'm talking about. But I actually want to talk about a helpline in the UK, because Humanists UK have launched a helpline dedicated to individuals leaving high control religions or cults also known as apostates. The helpline is called Faith to Faithless, and they aim to provide tailored support, resources, and empathy to, yeah, just help people navigate that, because it's so hard to leave your faith or questioning your faith. The helpline, it will be operated by trained volunteers, and they say, yes, it is very hard because there's social isolation. There might be mental health issues. There might be discrimination happening. And you will also lose a lot of your support network depending on where you leave a cult or a religion and where you're from. Like, I don't mean the country. I mean, like, from which religion. And they also think that the demand for these services will increase because there's the demographic trend of people wanting to leave higher control religions or cults, and anecdotal evidence. So it is important to support these people newly leaving or questioning their faith. And it's also important to meet them where they're at, because it is a special circumstance where they're in. This helpline operates 3 days a week, and it's free and confidential. So that sounds really awesome. And because apostates are so vulnerable, and just generic numbers to call that just give you a bit of help about, like, when you feel worried, this phone counseling, so to say, is usually not adequate because it's not targeted enough. Even for a society, it's important to support that because it's freedom of religion or belief, but it also means that you should be supported if you want to leave it, because that's the freedom of religion. So if you're abused, isolated, or like you name it, then this helpline is awesome to offer support.
And you do need support, yes, because it's a very, as you said, you talked about being isolated. Mm-hmm. You will become very often very isolated if you want to leave a cult, yes, or a religion, because all the social activity that you're used to, they will probably either shun you or mm-hmm, don't want, yes, anything to do with you, or they will come with, they will try to help you in ways that are not helpful, mm-hmm, trying to force you to stay. So you will become very often very lonely, mm-hmm, if you leave, and that's very, very, yes, hard. And it could be financial as well. If it's your family, if you're married to somebody who is deep into this and you have to leave all of that, maybe you need to leave your kids behind, or you don't have to do that, but it could be very hard to keep contact with your relatives after you leave. Very, very difficult. You do absolutely need help. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even it's like moral directions and all that, trying to find your way through life, it can be taken away from you as well when you lose your religion. Mm-hmm. Losing my religion.
No. Yeah.
So it's like, but that song, it just occurred to me how much of that this song is about. I mean, isn't that
that's me in the corner.
When you feel... Mm-hmm. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. It's this and that. You always find yourself in difficult situation that you don't know how to cope with. I really applaud this helpline by the Humanist UK. So amazing stuff, people. That's a wonderful group.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, you guys. Have you heard of Wim Hof and the Wim Hof method?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
Iceman.
The Iceman, exactly. And before people correct me, it is spelled with something that looks like a W, but it's actually a double V. So it's pronounced Wim Hof. He is Dutch. So it's not a British or English W. It's a double V. And listeners who heard my Skepticamp talk at the last QED will know exactly what I mean. If you didn't, I will just leave you there. It's pronounced Wim Hof. Okay, Wim Hof, the Iceman, as you said, is a motivational speaker and extreme athlete from the Netherlands. He claims that if you follow his method, the Wim Hof method, you can gradually learn to endure extreme cold. And this, in turn, should lead to, and here I'll have to take a deep breath, increased energy, better sleep, increased focus and determination, improved sports performance, increased willpower, reduced stress levels, greater cold tolerance, faster recovery, increased creativity, and stronger immune system. Basically, everything you want, a panacea, something that cures everything or helps you with everything, which, of course, is a big red flag.
Yes.
Nevertheless, Nevertheless, Wim Hof has demonstrated in public that he can endure cold beyond what most people can. He has a number of world records, though not as many as he would like you to believe. But he has, you know, he has the record of running the fastest barefoot marathon on ice and snow. So if you, that's something you aspire to, then maybe his method is for you. But Wim Hof has also been heavily criticized for using scientific-sounding concepts in a way that may appear good, but if you inspect it a little bit closer, it's mostly nonsense and contradictory. It has been pointed out that Wim Hof has a twin brother, André Hof, who seems to be able to withstand the cold just as well as Wim does, although his brother has not trained according to the Wim Hof method. In other words, Wim Hof's ability may have been something that he has inherited, not something that he has been training to do, or maybe his method is just not part of it. We should also add that there are 10 or so reported deaths of people who have tried to follow Wim Hof's recommendations.
Now that's an issue.
Yeah. And that's mostly been drowning and hypothermia accidents.
Yeah.
So, of course, if you try to swim under ice or in ice, things may happen to you. And, of course, the Wim Hof method has been studied scientifically, at least a little bit. And now Dr. Omar Al-Mahayani, maybe something like that, and Dr. Lucy Hammond, sorry for butchering people's name, from the University of Warwick, they have systematically reviewed the data from 8 published trials to try to identify if there are consistent trends and things like that, and see if there's anything in this Wim Hof method. And they published their results in the journal PLOS ONE. They got to the conclusion that people practicing the Wim Hof method has an increase in their stress hormone adrenaline and some anti-inflammatory chemicals, which they say is good news. And that may suggest that there's something to the Wim Hof method after all. But what they have done, these two scientists, is that they have aggregated existing data from studies that individually have been deemed too small and too poorly controlled to be useful. And they have taken this data and summed them up to become a big study. But you don't get high quality data by taking a lot of bad data and adding it all up together. As the saying goes, it doesn't matter how many cow patties you pile on top of each other, you still end up with just a big pile of cow poo. And Professor Mike Tipton of the University of Portsmouth Extreme Environment Laboratory seems to agree with me. And he said, quote, "This methodological approach tells us nothing about the relative benefits against other interventions, such as yoga, swimming in indoor pools, 30 minutes walking a day, or soccer. This is important because the Wim Hof method is not without risks. If the claimed benefits can be achieved by a lower risk activity, this would be advisable." End quote. So he compares this to other things. There are other things that you could do to keep in shape. And maybe you should do something that is not as risky as the Wim Hof method, which may still not turn out to work at all.
Oh, and I was about to suggest that Wim Hof goes back in time and tries to tell Robert Falcon Scott and his...
The South Pole expedition? That's what you're talking about?
And his associates, that they could actually train for enduring all that that harsh weather. So they could have lived through the whole thing instead of dying a terrible death in the cold, harsh winters Antarctica.
Since it seems that Wim Hof's brother had the same abilities or have the same abilities, maybe Scott and company should have chosen other parents. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
You seldom have that choice, though.
Never mind. Okay. Have you heard about the tragic thing that is happening to London?
Which one?
That they are... losing. London is losing its eye.
Oh, I've been in the London Eye. Me and my son, we were there a couple of years ago, or a number of years ago. It was before the pandemic. It was interesting experience.
Apparently, you're going to have to go up to Loch Lomond to go on the same Ferris wheel again. At least this is what a Facebook post is suggesting that has been shared like thousands of times and with many, many comments and tens of thousands of reactions. And I actually came across this by one of my Hungarian friends on Facebook who shared this. And the Facebook post suggests that the London Eye is being dismantled and taken up to Scotland, where it's going to be put back together on the shores of Loch Lomond, which is an interesting idea. It was probably put up on Facebook as a joke in the first place, especially since we know for a fact that the Travel Scotland Goals Group, that was the origin of this post, they themselves claim that whatever there is put up there is not necessarily 100% factual. So with that admission, I think you should apply a little bit more skepticism when it comes to these news. But luckily, Snopes came to the rescue and they did a little bit of an in-depth investigation. First of all, there are pictures as well. They tried to trace the pictures back to the earliest publication that they could find. And indeed, they could. So those pictures that are supposed to be showing the London Eye, the greatest money-making scheme of London. So that is the attraction in London that makes the most.
It was very expensive, I remember.
The construction of London, the London Eye, was supposed to celebrate the turn of the millennium as well. So that started in 1998 and it was opened in 1999. So it did have something to do with the millennium, but it never was called the Millennium Wheel, like the Facebook post suggests. It was also suggested that it was a 25-year lease that expired. So Scotland leased it to London for 25 years and now it expired, so it goes back to Scotland. The story was so elaborate that they suggested that it was a 2-mile-long caravan of vehicles carrying the dismantled parts of London Eye and everything. Obviously, among the comments, there were those that were very angry with people because they had booked tickets to London Eye for April or even further down the line. So they would have understandably be disappointed, of course. But I have to reassure everyone that your tickets are valid and you will be able to go up to London Eye. So back to the pictures, Snopes found out that they were from the original construction works. So they are very nice pictures. I knew a couple of them actually previously. So that was amazing how it got put together and how it started operation. But there is one little truth to the idea that it might not always stay there, because even though the Lambeth Council in London gave the London Eye a permanent license to operate back in 2002, there was a condition included in that license that said there might be a reevaluation as to whether it will stay on after 2028. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that 2024 would be the year that anything is happening to the London Eye.
No.
Definitely not a dismantling, and it's not going up to Loch Lomond. I mean, Loch Lomond is beautiful. I've been there several times. It's really lovely. Not much to see there. I mean, you could see part of the Highlands, but not even the most spectacular parts of the Highlands. So it wouldn't make sense to take it there.
No, but if they had taken it to Loch Ness to use it to look for the monster, then it would have been much more believable.
Yeah, especially if part of the wheel went down underwater? Into the water as a bit of a scoop, you know.
I think we're onto something here now. We should do this. We should
you
do
heard
this.
It here first, people.
yeah, let's scoop out the Loch Ness monster, yeah. So, no, the London Eye is not going anywhere, especially not to Scotland. Yeah, The closest thing it could go to is the River Thames, but it's too well constructed for that to happen. So I wouldn't worry about that either. This was just fake news. And people went for it, as it usually happens. Yeah, and those people were really wrong, but we're not going to give them an award for that. So we're going to have to do much better than that. So who's getting an award this week?
Yeah, this week, it might not be a really wrong award, but maybe a really weird award.
Oh, okay. There's a new category now.
It also ends with a W, or it begins with a W. So.
W still works. Yeah.
Because someone did a very interesting thing, and that was a 62-year-old gentleman claims he has been vaccinated 217 times against COVID.
What a waste. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
He acquired these vaccines privately because he wanted to. And public records were able to confirm 130 of these, the mRNA vaccines. And his personal records had 108 with a partial overlap. So
more than 100 more still than it's supposed
it's like,
to be.
Yeah, with lockdown being basically about 4 years ago, you maybe have like 7, 10 if you're stretching it, but 217, that's a wow.
That's extreme. Mm-hmm. That's extreme.
Science-based medicine, they even called it hypervaccination, which is a very good term for it.
So now it's a new word.
Hypervaccine, yeah.
They coined a new phrase.
New circumstances, new words, right? The question here is like, was it safe and did it provide extra protection? It seems that he had no side effects, didn't seem to suffer any medical issues. Yeah, no abnormalities. Completely good. Like no kidney or liver problems, no muscle breakdown, no autoimmune disease. Of course, they can't rule out any long-term effects. But yeah, it seems like any serious side effect that could have happened within 2 years didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it looks like the abnormalities had been there in the first place.
There were abnormalities,
in that person's mind, probably.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I hear that even after they found out about this guy and they started to investigate, he continued to take even more shots. Yeah. He's unstoppable.
Yeah, maybe he's a bit addicted to it. Who knows?
Yeah, vaccine addiction. That's a new thing.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, that's how they get
you. The question would be, did he also like maybe develop a Superman immune system? So, yeah, he did produce higher antibody levels, but...
Yeah, duh.
Yeah, exactly, like, duh. But it didn't lead to like a Superman-like of immune system where he's just like shooting lasers out of his eyes at viruses. So that would be cool, but no, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and he can now to heal with a touch. I mean,
very good.
You remember the Italian doctor who claimed that through coitus he can administer
the vaccine?
The vaccines of different sorts to women.
Yeah, do different you kind of pricks. On that? I remember this.
Are you talking about pricks or tricks?
Pricks. You could be pricked with a needle, and you could be pricked with a prick.
It
had the same effect. But it's amazing. Yeah. But it's crazy as this is. It's interesting to see that he actually doesn't seem to have had any ill effects. Because you could easily imagine that his immune system would just check out at this point because it's been so overly provoked that something would go wrong. And maybe, you don't know, it's only been a couple of years. Maybe in the future not a doctor, not a scientist, just Pontus speculating. But it wouldn't be crazy to think that his immune system would be overreactive in the future, somehow leading perhaps to some autoimmune disease.
Yeah, but even like the impact it can have on the skin or so. I had to use needles when I had gestational diabetes, like quite frequently. And I know it had an impact on my skin because I needed to prick my skin.
Yeah, the guy
so often.
Is basically now a pincushion.
Yeah, it's like and not even that. Hedgehog. Like he is a bit of a Superman, but he wasn't before he even took the all the vaccines.
Yeah,
yeah. It could be that all the antibodies are now leaking out of his system.
It's like those holes. Healthiest village in in the world.
No, but there is one thing that I wanted to react to mm-hmm. what you said, Pontus, and that is that you remember how the first vaccinations came about.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, cowpox was the thing that the milkmaids were prevented with from getting smallpox. They had a constant exposure to cowpox. His case is very similar to that. Being constantly exposed to something doesn't necessarily mean that you have to develop an overreaction. I mean, your immune reactions do not necessarily have to overshoot.
I need to say that I haven't had time to look into this, but I've heard also, quite unrelated to this story, that the story about the milkmaids may not be exactly as we have heard it. There might be.
Yeah.
I will look into that mm-hmm. sometime, because there's some myths going around about that as well. But it's just a in brackets.
At least that was the theory. Yeah.
But I'm not saying it's totally wrong, but it wasn't exactly as we have been told.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, medicine, that was actually a really cool thing. I mean, it's very, very small sample size with one person, but they still liked using the data he would provide, you know?
Yeah, this is a very unethical experiment, mm-hmm. but since he's already done it, maybe we can learn something from it.
And it was completely voluntary.
So, for coining the term hypervaccination, and for getting himself pricked like a needle cushion, and also providing a bit of data for medical scientists, this guy receives this week's prize for being really weird.
Okay.
Okay. New category.
A new category, and well deserved. Yeah. And that brings us to the end of this episode, which is usually marked by a quote. Annika, do we have one?
Yes, we have one, and it's by Marie Salomea Skorowska Curie, or maybe I butchered that pronunciation. She's mostly known as Marie Curie, Polish and French physicist and chemist, first woman to win a Nobel Prize.
Twice,
yes. And this is a very short and sweet quote, and I thought it doesn't have the biggest skeptical angle, so to say, but it does have a bit of an angle of me taking a break of the show. So that's why I like this one. And the quote is, "I never see what has been done. I only see what remains to be done." End quote.
Yeah. Look ahead. Yes. Look ahead. That's what
exactly.
she's saying.
Look ahead.
You know what I read into this?
What?
Is that you can never be content with what you have, because you always think about what needs to be done, and you cannot rest. Yeah, that's basically.
Yeah, that's it could be depressing as well.
So
but if you have it,
I can relate to that. Really,
yeah. But yeah, if you twist it positively, then you will say, "Okay, I've done something very good, but now what is next?" So to keep going is good, I think.
I don't know how many of our listeners know that reference, but Mrs. Lanningham, what's next? That is from
I don't know
my all-time favorite series, The West Wing.
Oh. Ah, okay.
Yeah. Great characters, wonderful writing.
Yeah.
Still works. I occasionally watch it just to escape from the reality of today's politics.
Yeah, exactly. This is unfortunately pure fiction. I wish we could have an American president or government that is as sensible as they are, but
dream on.
Dream on.
But trying to make some sense, we will keep producing the show. And there are a couple of things that you can do as well, apart from supporting our efforts as this show goes out every week. And obviously, you can help with that by letting us know what you think or sending a bit of donations our way. But you can also go to events.
Oh, yes. Well, we have one event coming up pretty soon. End of May, early June. It's the European Skeptics Congress in Lyon, France.
France.
France. Vive la France. It'll be a great time, I'm sure. And everybody who's planning to go should sign up now, because at the end of March, the early bird prizes will expire. So if you want to have that little extra rebate, if you will, you should sign up before that. Also, I should say that anybody who is a member of a skeptical organization, no matter what skeptical organization, you will get another rebate as well. So if you are, please make sure to tick in the price level of a member into the registration form. So please go ahead and do that. And I hope to see you there.
Yes, that will be exciting.
Yes. And it's going to be held between the 30th of May and the 2nd of June.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I think it's time for us to say goodbye, at least until next week. When we come back, well, Annika won't, but Pontus and myself will be back. Yeah, and we'll be waiting for that moment. So, Annika, take care.
Will do. Thank you.
Get your well-deserved rest. And yeah, please just stay safe. And
will do.
We'll be here to welcome you back when you decide to come back.
I will.
And I'd like to thank you both for this week, Annika and Pontus.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Many, many thanks to our listeners as well for tuning in and bearing with us. Please keep doing so. And until next week, goodbye.
Tschüss.
Hejdå.
Vissla.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schrab and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook.
I don't know how you can believe.
An independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics, and interviews. People. Okay. Start again.
That was quick.
Yeah, it's me, right?
Yeah, it's me.
No, it's me.
Not in the corner.
I mean, it's my son.
But in the spotlight. In the spotlight.
I'm in the spotlight. Okay, good editing here.
Sorry.
Of the University of Portsmouth. Portsmouth. University of Portsmouth.
Annika, we have one?
Yes.
Can you repeat that? Anders.